Good evening, everyone. I'm Pam Speck, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I'm very, very honored to have a very special Canadian writer with me. He's won all kinds of accolades from such best-selling authors as C.J. Box, John Stanford, and John Lesquois, whom you know is one of my favorites. Owen Laukkanen is a crime fiction writer, and his reviews are so hot that Kirkus Book Reviews said a gut-wrenching tale filled with empathy for alienated teens. This may be the best yet in a first-rate series. Now, that's from Watcher in the Wall, his new book. I'm really excited that Owen is here with me tonight. Owen, welcome to Authors on the Air. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on, Pam.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I know that you are real popular doing Noir at the Bar program, and I hear about you all the time, and of course I see all of your posts and all. I have to ask you first, before we go any further, tell me about your dog. You tweet
yeah, my dog
about
is,
that pup. That's your, like, your best friend, right?
She's more famous than I am, certainly. She has a better reputation in the crime community than I do. She's my best friend. I've had her for a couple of years. My girlfriend and I have had her, and her name's Lucy. She's a 60-pound pit bull rescue from California, and she basically lies on the couch beside me all day while I write, and I walk her until she's tired, and then I write some more. So we're pretty much inseparable now.
Wow, 60 pounds, that's not a small baby.
No, it really changed my life. When we adopted her, she was a year old, and I was used to having just time, you know, to write whenever I wanted, but my writing schedule became walking her. I would walk her about 6 miles a day just to wear her out enough that she would fall asleep and I would have time to get my writing in. She certainly has the run of the house. She sleeps on whatever couch, bed, or soft object she wants to sleep on. She's our baby.
Aw, she's adorable. So I'm glad you're a pet lover. That tells me something really great about you. But it doesn't tell me anything about your love of books and writing. Start from the beginning and tell me about how you decided to write crime fiction.
Well, I always say that my parents were the type of people where there was a poster of their faces up in the library because we would take so many books out and they'd invariably get lost, but that they would not be allowed to come back. But our house was filled with books growing up, and my brothers and I would just read widely and voraciously whatever we could find. And so I think if you grow up reading, the transition to writing can be fairly straightforward. So when I was a teenager, I knew that I wanted to be a writer, and my parents supported that, but they also suggested that I find something to fall back on. And so I tried. I actually went
case,
to,
right?
yeah, well, they're doctors. And so they wanted, I think they kind of wanted me to go the science route. So I did 2 years of pre-veterinary studies. I thought I might want to become a veterinarian. And then after a couple of years of it, I decided I would just be a writer and get a dog. And so that's what I did. So
that
I went
was your
to...
compromise, right?
yeah.
Love
yeah.
That. That's
surround myself with animals, but not necessarily get, you know, paid for it. So I got a creative writing degree instead, which, you know, it's not the most useful degree in the world, and pretty much, you know, guaranteed that I would have to write or make coffee to earn a living. And luckily the writing has worked out so far.
Has worked out well. Your debut novel, The Professionals, just earned so many rave reviews from critics and from your readers. You introduced us to a character that would become your series character, correct?
Yeah, two of them actually, an FBI agent and a state policeman who worked together. They were really not the focus of that book. I wrote that book thinking it was a standalone. It's written about four of my friends and what would happen if they couldn't find jobs and had to become professional kidnappers. And so when I wrote that book, they were really the main characters. And I think a lot of reader response has been people really liking the bad guys who were really, friends of mine. And it was only after the book was finished and we showed it to the publisher that they suggested we write a series based on these cops, Stevens and Windermere. And so that's what we've done, which has been great. But those bad guys still hold a place in my heart. They're really the heart and soul of that first book.
Now, do your friends know that you wrote the book for them?
Yeah, they do. The main character, Arthur Pender, is he's still one of my really good friends, and his buddy, the kind of thug or the kind of muscle of the group, Matt, is another good friend of mine. I always feel kind of bad because I really only picked out his intimidating side, where he's really more of a three-dimensional human being. But no, they like it, and I think they get a kick out of it. People, I try to throw my friends' names into the books where I can, and just little Easter eggs for those who know.
How funny! Your first book was so highly praised that the people who gave you reviews and blurbs looks like the top 10 of any, or top 20 of any bestseller list. Lee Child, John Lesquois, John Sanford, Jonathan Kellerman, Thomas Perry, Alifer Burke, Steve Barry, C.J. Box, Sarah Weinman. Then you have probably every important literary review journal here: Milwaukee Journal, Inks, Library Journal, Bookish Ways, Cleveland's, Beintingler, which, they love that kind of stuff, Washington Times,
yeah,
the Daily Mail in the UK, Richmond Times, Steve Weddle also gave you a thing, Toronto Star. Oh, my God, the list goes on and on and on. Eric Beatner, you've not done too bad for yourself here in racking up some awesome praise for your book. Congratulations on that. So then,
well, thank you. It was. I think if you could picture a 28-year-old kind of rookie watching these blurbs from the greats roll in, I still have moments where I pinch myself about where my career has gone. Certainly, John Sanford is funny because he and my editor, or he and I share an editor, Neil Niren at Putnam, when Neil read The Professionals, he said that he could see the similarities with John's work, and I hadn't read any of the Davenport books before.
Oh my God!
So I picked up the first one and read it, and I thought, oh my God, this Sanford guy is going to think I'm just trying to move in on his territory, because it's, the series character is a Minnesota,
yeah,
Bureau of Criminal Apprehension,
yeah,
agent like Davenport. It's set in the Twin Cities.
Pardon me.
And I thought that I would just make an enemy of the man, but he's been so kind and gracious, and I think you'd agree he's a really kind,
wonderful,
kind man, and
he's very kind.
Yeah.
He really is. Yeah, he really is. And he appreciates readers as well as other authors. It's interesting to me because he has a book club for readers.
Does he really?
Or just, yes. He's very interested in keeping people reading. When I spoke to him, he wrote his first science fiction book. Have you ever heard him talk about science fiction? Oh, and it's really interesting. He said he always had an interest in it, but he never he didn't want to write a book where the science fiction was not understandable to him, or he couldn't,
sure,
explain it. So he wrote with a science fiction guy, and that's when I happened to talk to him. But you're right, Davenport is a brilliant character, and the most recent book was very, very good. It was a lot of fun, to read. He's kind of an irreverent guy, so that'll give everyone a hint as to where you're. Your next book was Criminal Enterprise, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so that one.
Now you've got this serious characters that you never had anticipated being serious characters. How did you feel about that?
Well, it was, I felt daunted for a number of reasons. I'd never written a book that I had already signed a contract for. You know, when I wrote The Professionals, I was just writing in, you know, literally in my mom's basement with, you know, just kind of dreaming of what would happen. And then Criminal Enterprise, when I sat down to write it, I was getting these blurbs from Lee Child and John Sanford rolling in and realizing that I had kind of gotten myself into a predicament where I would have to write a book, you know, that would live up to The Professionals. And you know, moreover, as you say, I hadn't intended to write a series, and it was quite challenging because, you know, my series characters, the BCA agent, the Davenport-esque mm-hmm. character is a man named Kirk Stevens,
yes.
who,
right.
is about as far from Davenport as you can get. I think he's a pretty dowdy, family man,
right.
kind of. And then his partner is an FBI agent named, Carla Windermere, who's a, you know, young hotshot. And in The Professionals, because I thought that the kidnappers were the main characters. So I really wrote Windermere as a one-dimensional, you know, those one-dimensional quote,
mm-hmm.
quote unquote, strong female characters who can,
sure.
you know, subdue a bad guy in a cocktail dress and stilettos while, you know, reciting
right.
Japanese poetry and doing kung fu. Like, she was really like, you know, she's kind of over the top. And
right.
so that's really not the kind of female character that I want to write and that I want to be known for. And so with Criminal Enterprise, the challenge and the fun part was writing Windermere back from being this one-dimensional cliche into something that, you know, more closely resembles a human being. And it's one of my favorite of my books just because it was so challenging and it was rewarding to delve deeper into these characters who I never really thought I would see again.
It's interesting to me that your first book, well, I'm going to make an assumption that your first book was picked up by Putnam, but was The Professionals actually your first book? I don't know if it was or not.
Well, it was my first book that was published. Yeah. I mean, I started writing novels when I was a teenager, and actually
really
yeah, you know, just I thought, well, this is what I want to do, so I'm gonna write novels until I get one that sticks, and that was really how I operated, or that was my mindset. And it's funny, the first thing I ever wrote, I wrote when I was about 19, 20 and tried to get it published and it didn't go anywhere, but I liked the idea. And so I put it in a drawer, and after I was three books into the Stevens of Windermere series, I took it out and updated it, and, you know, polished it a bit and sold it to, or showed it to my agent. And she sold it under a pen name as a YA novel. It's called How to Win at High School by Owen Matthews. And it came out last year. So I always look at it as my,
fun.
Never give up on an idea, because I kind of held that idea close for a decade or so. And always thought that once I got a little traction, I would try to get it made. And it has been. So it's, you know, it's quite,
and it's doing well,
quite rewarding.
Is
yeah.
It
yeah,
well?
It is. It's essentially the plot of Scarface in a high school. And, I mean, my path to writing YA fiction, I tried to write a YA novel just in my spare time between Stevens and Windermere books. And it came out as though, you know, your dad wrote it. Like, it was very moral. It was very like boring.
Right, right.
Would be a word. There was, you know, no drugs, no sex, no alcohol, strong moral background. And, kind of preachy. And obviously my agent didn't even bother to try to sell it. So I showed her How to Win at High School, which is, you know, there's drug use, there's sex, there's swearing. I think the F word is used 300 times. And I counted. So it's, you know, it's not the kind of thing that if I were a parent, I would be necessarily looking for my kid to read. But as a kid, it was the kind of thing that I wanted to read. And that certainly seems to be the reaction from people. It plays well with reluctant readers.
It's actually a cute cover. And so it's a very YA looking book. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
How fun. Now, one of the things that interests me, you said that you had your creative writing degree, but of course, and it really doesn't, for all the good it does me, that's what you said, but because writing, the craft of writing is a lot more than a creative writing degree, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
And so you said that also you decided to write novels through high school. So pretty much all your life you've been writing, but seriously writing novels in high school. Is the secret to it just putting your butt in a chair and writing? Is that what it really is, Owen?
Yeah, I think you know, for me, I did my writing degree, and then I worked a job that it was a great job. I was paid to travel around the world watching poker tournaments. So, you know,
really?
It was, as a 25 year old. Oh yeah, it was. Oh yeah, it paid well.
Okay, hold on a second. Let's take a cut in the author stuff and tell me about this job. This is fabulous.
Okay.
Tell me about it.
So, essentially, it begins right as I was finishing my last year of my degree and finishing my last semester, and I was looking for a summer job. And I basically applied to anything I could find. I applied to drive a car for an escort agency, which didn't pan out. And then I ultimately took a graveyard shift job at a, you know, like a Macy's warehouse. But right as I was going to take my first shift, I saw this ad for it said, you know, spend 6 weeks in Las Vegas writing about the World Series of Poker. And I didn't know anything about poker, but I knew that I wanted to go to Vegas for 6 weeks. And so I showed them a couple short stories. And they, yeah, exactly. I mean, I was 23. I was trying to have an adventure. And it sounded too good to be true. Like, it sounded like a job where they would ask for your credit card number before they interviewed you. But
right.
It turned out to be legit. So they sent me down to Las Vegas with a few other guys for the World Series of Poker, which was 6 weeks in the Vegas summer of just, you know, debauchery and degeneracy. And then at the end of it, they asked me if I would like to do it full time, essentially traveling the world to high stakes poker tournaments. And so for 3 years, that's what I did. I made my own schedule. I was paid more than any, you know, 25 year old traveling around the world to write about poker would expect to be paid. And I was on the road about 3 weeks of every month, and just, you know, I went to Macau, I went to Australia, I went to Uruguay, I went all over Europe. It was glorious. It was a great job.
What a dream job.
And it all came from this Craigslist ad. It really changed my life.
Oh, my God, of all places, really, Craigslist. That's interesting.
Yeah, you would never believe. But
no.
So after 3 years of that, I remember when I kind of had my epiphany. I was in London, and I'd watched two guys play poker for 26 hours straight and had to write interesting things about it, which, you know, like, poker fundamentally is not interesting to watch or to read about.
No.
And it's certainly not enough that you would invest 26 hours in following someone else playing poker. So I realized that, for all of its merits, this wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And after 3 years, I, you know, it was either strike out and do something else or stay in it. And cause it, you know, it was one of those jobs that's comfortable enough that, you know, you're never going to find a better situation. So the risk is you could stay in it forever and just, you know, be kind of comfortable, but fundamentally unhappy. And I wanted to write fiction.
Right.
So I took the money that I'd saved up and moved back in with my mom and wrote. And after a couple months, I had the first draft of The Professionals. And after about 6 months, I had an agent. And after a year, I had the book deal. So it, you know, everything broke kind of perfectly for me.
I wanted, it was a charmed life, but the fact of the matter is, writing a book is not easy, is it?
It's not. I mean, I think you can say it's a charmed life because it really was. I think in a lot of ways, I've won the lottery.
For a young man, for a young man, traveling that kind of a job may have been a charmed life. But what I'm saying is I don't think that, you know, that gave you, it may have given you ideas for writing a book, but it certainly is not something, it's only a young man's job, it sounds like, at least in your opinion. You think it's just a young man's job, right?
It is. Yeah, I think, you know, I have friends who stuck with it and they're still doing it now, 10 and 11 years down the road. And, you know, now they have mortgages, so they kind of have to do it.
Wow.
You know, it was, when I was doing it, it was, you know, it's a glamorous job that I would come home and have cool stories for my friends, but I knew I was never going to do it forever.
Right.
But you're right. Writing a book, you know, when I quit my job and sat down to write, I had this money saved up. And so I was, you know, I essentially thought I would fund my own private writing retreat for myself. And I would just write for as long as I had money in the bank, because that was the only way. Like, I tried to write while I was working this poker job, and it just, you know, I just couldn't get any traction.
Sure.
So when I set out to write, my fear was that I would just, you know, be one of those people who just has a box full of, you know, half completed projects or you know, just never really takes it seriously. So I approached it like a job. I got up and I wrote between 5,000 and, well, about 5,000 words a day.
Wow.
Monday through Friday.
A lot of words.
Which,
a lot of words.
I mean, it sounds like a lot. You know, I had nothing else to do. I had just spent 3 years writing about poker. So this was really like I was, you know, free to write what I wanted.
Sure.
You know, with nothing else to do and a dwindling bank account, it wasn't as difficult. I mean, as a writer, one of my, you know, fundamental tenets is that I think that, you know, you should just write an awful first draft. Just write a first draft and get it done and then edit. So I wrote 5,000 terrible words every day. And then, you know, at the end of 6 weeks or 2 months, I had a terrible first draft. And then the real work, you know, began in trying to make it publishable.
After doing all that traveling and writing, which was by your own admission, kind of boring stuff, were you happy to be in a quiet space to just be able to create, or did you require some kind of noise happening around you or action or anything like that? What is your process?
No,
like?
No, I was quite happy. And to this day, I really need, you know, I need to be in my apartment. I need to be, you know, at my couch with nothing going on around me. I need the dog sleeping beside me. I just need, you know, I need peace.
And
certainly, my mom was living in this beautiful townhome that looked over a ravine, so it was almost like a treehouse. You know, with huge ceilings, and it was the opposite of of casino life. Like, I'd spent, you know, 3 weeks of every month for the past 3 years living in casino hotels where you couldn't, you know, you couldn't get a vegetable if you tried. You couldn't see grass if you
right.
if you had the
yeah.
So this was and she had two cats, so, you know, I had companionship. So it was perfect. It was ideal.
Oh, good. What's next on your agenda? Are you going to continue to write the series? Would you like to do something? Because I want to talk about Watcher in the Wall in just a few minutes. But would you like to write a standalone? Would you like to write out of your genre? Tell me what your thoughts are on that. It's almost difficult,
well,
I would imagine, for you to upset the apple cart if the apple cart is doing well. But sometimes a little shakeup might be necessary, or maybe you have more stories to tell with Stevens and Windermere.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny that it's good timing for that question, because there's one more Stevens and Windermere book coming out next year, and then we're going to take a break. The next book that comes out will be a completely different. Completely different book that draws on a different element of my life and my work history, where I used to work. I come from a family of fishermen. My grandfather was a boat builder. My uncle
Wow.
was a professional fisherman. My dad, as a doctor, had his. You know, he was a practicing oncologist, and then he bought a lobster fishing boat and fished commercially for lobster while he was practicing medicine.
Recently
retired from medicine, but is still fishing for lobster to this day. When I was in university, I would work on fishing boats. And I loved it. So I wrote a nautical adventure novel, kind of in the Clive Cussler vein. And so that will be coming out,
fun.
I think, in 2018. So that's the next thing. I think one of the things that I've been lucky about writing about Stevens and Windermere is that I'm able to structure the books in a way that they're not necessarily the driving force. You know, they solve the crimes, but there's always other characters who move the plot along. And in the book that came out before The Watcher and the Wall, it's called The Stolen Ones, and it's about I wanted to write a book about sex trafficking, because I'd read a lot about sex trafficking, and I there had not been much that I'd seen either in you know, reading or watching TV or movies. You know, there's a lot about the people trying to stop sex trafficking, there's a lot about the bad guys, but I really hadn't seen much from the point of view of the human beings who were being trafficked, and I wanted to write that story. So the Stolen Ones is about two sisters from Romania who are kidnapped and brought to America in a shipping container. And one of them escapes the shipping container and the other one doesn't manage to. And so it's essentially the story of one sister trying to get her younger sister back. And Stevens and Windermere are just, you know, they're obviously a major part of the story, but a lot of the heart and soul comes from these sisters. And so that, you know, that's kind of teased my need to, or my desire to write a standalone, and that I can write about what I want to write and fit it into a Stevens and Windermere book and not feel as though I'm, you know, just writing the same book over and over again, because that's what the market demands. I do have ideas for stuff that doesn't fit into the Stevens and Windermere mold, and I am excited to try that out. But I've been very lucky in that this series, you know, doesn't pigeonhole me into just one, you know, one specific crime over and over again.
It sounds to me like you want your series characters are not necessarily your primary characters. At least in your mind, they're not. Your primary characters happen to be either the protagonist or antagonist of the story. For example, in the first one, your four guys were really your prime characters in it. So I find that fascinating, too. We have a caller, so let's see who's calling in from area code 281. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Owen.
Go ahead, you're live.
Hi. Owen, can you hear me?
Hi.
Yes.
Hey, it's Michelle.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
I'm good. Can you hear? Are y'all,
thank
can you
so
guys
much
hear
for
me?
Calling.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
of course.
We can hear you. Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. I missed you whenever you came to Houston, and I felt really bad about that because I always like talking to you. I kind of feel like I have, like, seen you from when you started to now, and I'm so proud of you. I have a couple of questions. Okay.
Sure.
All right. My first question is, how do you find time to write when I see you, like, hiking and going all over the country?
Yeah, it's tough. And part of that is because of Lucy. I try to keep her tired out. But I think as a writer, you spend so much time indoors and sedentary that you know, it really behooves you to get out and exercise, or else you'll be an overweight writer who dies an early death. And so,
whenever you're doing the hiking, do you find yourself like just saying, okay, well, just a minute, I'm going to go sit on over here because I have this great idea, and you sit down and you write it?
No, but I do keep it in my head. I think it's a great way to just work out plot, and come up with characters and just, you know, let your mind wander. And that's really what I like about it. And, it's just a way to, I think it's kind of therapeutic just being out, away from the city. And, I mean, you know, you've been to Vancouver, you know, the environment we have up here,
it's gorgeous.
It would be a waste to not be out in the mountains. So
it is
a struggle balancing it, but.
And also, okay, my other question, and I've said this many times to you, that I'm always impressed because you write about topics that are kind of like they're a little bit scary. I don't know. It's just stuff that, you know, you'd usually be scared to touch, or someone would be scared to touch, and you, like, bring it out to where, like, Watcher in the Wall was, like, really hard for me to read. And
sure,
it was an extremely good book. Extremely good. It was just like such a sad topic. But it's exactly things that are going on now. So I mean, you touched on it and you brought that out to the surface, which you probably have helped a lot of people by bringing it out into the open to everybody.
Well, thanks. I hope so. I have had some positive responses from readers, and people who've reached out. It's a book about bullying and teen suicide, and those are subjects that are really close to my heart, both as, you know, just as a someone who reads the news and watches, you know, hears about teens committing suicide and teens bullying each other, and as someone who has, you know, dealt with mental health issues and depression, I want to write about things that are important to me. I never want to be the guy who writes about, the bad guy who's just bad, right? Because that's just who he is. I want to get into the heart and soul of why someone would do these things. And in the case of The Watcher in the Wall, it was based on a real criminal in Minnesota who went online and lured people into killing themselves on webcam for him. And he one of his victims was a beautiful young woman from Canada. She was 18 years old. And, I remember just being horrified by it. Like, you know, I can't think of a much more despicable act than to prey on people who are in that kind of vulnerable state. And I think, you know,
no, I understand. I get it. And I'm like so impressed because you're like, so you pick the topics that are what's going on right now. And and you, like I said, you keep people on their toes. The same thing with the solo ones. I mean, I know that. I mean, that whole bringing the women in and selling them, that was bothersome. I guess this one bothered me because whenever I was working in the school, every year, we would have at least two seniors that would, like, commit suicide, or it would be just, it's like, you just don't think about that. And then you don't hear about that stuff on news, so people aren't thinking about it, and they don't realize this is going on unless you're involved in a school and you're there and you see these kids, and they're already, like, isolated in the cyberbullying that's going on. And, I mean, like, I just want to say thank you for bringing this up to the public.
Well, thank you very much. It's really heartening to get responses. I mean, I know that you're a discerning reader, so it's great to have your vote of approval. And it's also, I mean, it's nice to hear from people who, you know, with whom it strikes a chord. And I think it's a hard time to be a young person growing up. I think, you know, when I was in school, if you wanted to get away from a bully, you could, you know, go home. And now, if you go home and go online, they're still bullying you on Facebook, and it's just pervasive. And so, I watch the news. I see cases of this every now and then of teen suicide, and it really gets me. So I wanted to write something.
And you actually wrote at the end of the book, you had you have the number, and you told people how to get in touch with someone to help them with that. I mean,
that's great.
You're a gracious writer. I mean, you've got a huge heart, but your books are definitely. I don't want to make it sound like you're a soft writer. I mean, you're good. You're good. Like, you keep you're like a summer thriller writer. That's what I see. It's like okay, Owen's book's coming out. All right, we know we're going to be reading this, and you just then when you finish it, it's like, damn, now I got to wait till the next one. So.
Michelle, you are the crime fiction author's best friend. I want you to know.
It's fact.
It really is. If there's no one who supports authors more as a reader than Michelle. So I'm so glad that you called in. I'm glad that you guys are friends, and I'm glad you had a chance to talk. Thank you so much, Michelle. And you and I will be speaking later in the week, I'm sure, right?
Absolutely. And chat. Owen, good luck. And tell Lucy hello.
I will.
And good luck with your next book, because I know that you're working away.
Thanks very much, Michelle. Great
right.
to hear from you.
Okay, good night.
It was
Bye-bye.
Great talking
Bye.
To you. Good night.
Okay, Pam. Good night.
I love having feedback from readers other than myself, because I hate being kind of the lone voice of things, since I read so prolifically. But you know, Michelle, for example, is so good about supporting authors, and that's really nice. And that's got to feel really good for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, I remember my first book signing at Murder by the Book in Houston, which is you know, one of the best indie bookstores in the country.
In the country,
and it's also,
yes, it is.
Michelle's hometown. And so, you know, there was a McKenna who owns the store, you know, handed me a book and said, this is for Michelle. And, you know, if she likes you, she will sing your praises from the rooftops. And, you know, she'll be your best friend.
True.
And since then, you know, I've had the pleasure of meeting her, and she really is a writer's best friend and a very, you know, a wonderful person. So I think as crime writers, we're lucky to have Michelle and people like her.
I think so too. And I'm lucky because she's very supportive of the shows in this network too. So I'm blessed for that. Owen, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed chatting with you. I've taken up so much of your time, and I'm sorry for that. But I hope back sometime. Please come back, and fill us in on what's happening. Don't wait for the next book, and maybe, I don't know,
I'd love to have you and John Sanford on together in conversation. If I can arrange that, will you come back?
Of course, yeah. Are you kidding? That would be amazing.
It would be fun.
I mean, you know, for me, just being mentioned in the same breath is flattering. So, yeah. Yeah,
oh, but
I
would
love
to do that because he's such a generous speaker and such a generous guest, and I'd love just to hear you two in conversation. I'd love to try that if it's okay with you.
I would love that too. Yeah, that sounds glorious.
Okay, you're going to Thriller Fest. Are you nominated for an award?
No, I'm up for a Barry at VoucherCon for The Stolen Ones, but no Thriller Award this year.
Well, that's okay, because VoucherCon's just as good, and that's going to be a lot
it's
of fun
true.
In NOLA. And you know that we're broadcasting from there live almost every day. So, and I think there's a noir at the bar going on. I'm sure I have to ask Eric Buettner. But regardless, I hope we see you, and I hope you come over and join us, whatever little dark cave they shove us into to do a broadcast from there. I hope you find us. We'll be sure to put out the word. Yeah, please
awesome.
Do.
I'll look for you.
You know, most likely it'll be, you know, the neo-noirs and the dark crime guys, you know, where we were before in the bar, kind of in a cluster there, looking like a bunch of hoodlums or something. That's probably where we'll be again. So,
I love those guys. That's a good crew.
It's a very good crew. It's a ton of fun. So, thank you again. And I, you know, congratulations on the success. On the success of all of your books, and especially with the new one out. As Michelle said, they are stunningly real and wonderful. And The Watcher on the Wall is just, it's necessary. And that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, that's wonderful to hear.
It's necessary. A big hello to Lucy from the Five Cats here. And you and I will talk again soon, okay?
Sounds great. I look forward to it, Pam.
Have a great evening. Thank you so much. Owen, have a great evening.
Thanks.
Good night.
Bye.
Tomorrow night I'll be talking to Joshua Hood, whose new book, Warning Order, is out. Stay with us. And I appreciate you being with me. Go get one of Owen's books. They are terrific. Start with The Professionals. Read all the way through, see what it's all about. Have a great night. Thank you, Michelle Perlick-Eiser, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.